Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience and those tuning in online around the world. We really appreciate your time today. Have a very special guest that's joining us for this next segment that's written a powerful book that I know will continue to have people talking. It's already an Amazon.com bestseller. We're excited to welcome Mary Frances Winters to our program today. Her new book is called Black Fatigue, How Racism Erodes the Mind, Body, and Spirit. We'll talk to Mary Frances not only about the writing of the book, but also the different layers that she's able to talk about in the book, whether we're talking about just race relations, of course, the disparities that exist, the issues, of course, that we've seen arisen this year, not only with a pandemic, but also with the social unrest. But she also offers solutions, too, that we can be able to look forward to, that all of us can be a part of. If you all are just now finding out about Black Fatigue, of course, we'll let you know how to get your own copy of the book. But Mary Frances, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, as I mentioned, the book is already another bestseller for you, Mary Frances, so congratulations to you on that. So I want to talk about the response so far. I mean, the book is newly released, but what has it been like for you to see the way that people are already responding to the messages you're sharing?
It's been amazing. I think that the time is right. Actually, the book wasn't supposed to come out until next February, and we realized that it was very timely. I thought about the book, a year or so ago. And while I had the first draft written, we were going to be doing the editing and whatnot, and we just accelerated everything because I think it is a perfect storm right now in terms of the pandemic and what's happening with the economy and the racial unrest and people who aren't working. And we're just at a really critical, very troubling place in our economy, in our world. And I think it's time for a book like Black Fatigue, because people are ready to really dig in and better understand what systemic racism is really all about, perhaps once and for all.
Yeah. You do say something, though, that is interesting, and it's something that I have heard, and maybe even, I can't say for sure, I haven't said it, Mary Frances, that, you know, there are people, optimists like myself in particular, I'll just say myself, who will say, well, you know what, there are issues, but there have been so much progress. One of the things that you say very early in the book is that we should not rest on our laurels. We should not just look at progress. We should keep moving forward to making sure that there is more done. Why is that a dangerous thing for us to just say, well, you know what, things are better than they were?
Well, it's not, I don't know that people think it's dangerous. I think people think it's just comfortable. It's comfortable to be able to say, well, you know, look, we don't have slavery anymore. We have the Civil Rights Act of 1964. We elected a black president. And so all of these things point to that we have made progress. But in chapter 3 of my book, which I call Then Is Now, I point to so many socioeconomic indicators which would say we have not made progress. We are really where we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 60 years ago. You can think of Brown versus Board of Education, the legislation that the Supreme Court landmark legislation that made it illegal to segregate public schools. Well, our public schools are more segregated today than they were in 1954. And that's just one data point. And there are many more that I point out in the book. And I think that's why we're seeing the protests, these younger activists. I'm a baby boomer. I've been doing this work for 36 years. And the messages that I'm giving today are the same messages that I was giving that I was giving 36 years ago. And that's fatiguing.
Yeah. Exactly right. I mean, when I mentioned to someone about the title of the book, they had not read it, of course, but the title itself evokes an immediate reaction because it's like people, and you hear people say this, I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm tired of turning on the television and seeing another story about an unarmed black individual being killed by police. I'm tired of hearing about how these, like we just heard about today and in the town hall the president held yesterday about the disparities that exist when it comes to health care and minorities and how we are disproportionately being affected by things like the coronavirus pandemic. There is such a thing there, but one of the things, of course, that came up also in the recent town hall with the president that you address in the book is racism. And it goes to an interesting part of your subtitle of this book as we kind of look at the mind-body-spirit aspect. And I don't know if most people, including myself, think about this, Mary Frances, that you talk about the physiological and psychological maladies that kind of, you know, mix together when it comes to racism. Talk to us about that and how that plays a role in this book.
Yes, we don't, I think, as Black people, I don't think that we do connect some of our concerns, some of our health issues to racism. Several municipalities have declared racism a public health crisis. And studies show now, new studies are coming out to show that what happens when we are under the stress of living while Black, not being sure that you're going to be accepted or not be even being sure that you're going to come home alive. And even in the workplace, we do a lot, the Winters Group, my company, does a lot of work in the workplace. And we've been doing a lot of interviews and surveys over the last few months as a result of the Black Lives Matter protests with Black employees. And they say things like, I have to be on guard all the time. I'm not sure what that I'm going to be accepted. I feel isolated. They see me as a threat. Those things accumulate the stress that causes and the accumulation of that stress. And even seeing, like you say, seeing repeated images of people who look like you being killed creates this response in the body that gets connected to our cellular system. I'm not a doctor or a scientist. I'm not going to go very far with this, but it gets connected to our cellular system and it gets passed down from generation to generation. And so when we look at when we look at heart disease, when we look at cancer and all of the diabetes and all of these health indicators that are disparate for Black people, scientists are saying that it's not only about the environment and, you know, in terms of what we eat and all of that. It is about racism. So there is a direct connection that they are finding. Let me give you this statistic. Even middle-class Black women are twice as likely to die in childbirth as poor white women. And so they have access to care, they're getting the care, but it is because, and the branch of science is called epigenetics, it's called this intergenerational or transgenerational phenomenon that happens because of racism.
Right. I should mention, Mary Frances, in the book in Chapter 2, you give a definition for Black fatigue for us to kind of think about after you share a part of your own story, which we're going to come back to that. But you mentioned in Chapter 2, I should first define what I mean by Black fatigue. The dictionary defines fatigue as extreme tiredness resulting from mental or physical exertion or illness. A secondary definition refers to mental fatigue, weakness in materials, especially metal, caused by repeated variations of stress. And as you go on to talk about, you know, what Black fatigue is, you see, I define Black fatigue as repeated variations of stress that result in extreme exhaustion and cause mental, physical, and spiritual maladies that are passed down from generation to generation. That was an interesting thing for me because I mentioned when I was talking to you before we went on here, the intergenerational aspect, and I have to say, I'm one of those people who have sometimes been dismissive of that when I'm in conversations with people, and people will say, well, they're doing that because of, you know, going back to slavery. They still have that slave mentality. And I would say, how are you going to equate that with slavery and make that connection? So talk to us about that, what it was like for you to look at that, Mary Frances, and how things are passed down and how we do kind of take those things on, even going back to slavery.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, just in terms of the messages that we get, and so internalized racism is when we internalize those negative stereotypes about ourselves and we begin to believe them. So internalized racism, we may not even be aware of it, but it is real. So Dr. Kenneth and Mamie Clark in the 40s did the Black Doll experiment where they showed Black children Black dolls and white dolls, and the children invariably said that the white dolls were better, that they were prettier, that they were smarter. That was repeated. So that was in the 40s. That was repeated in 2011, 2012. A PhD student repeated that experiment, and the same thing was found, that these Black children, preschool age, thought that the white dolls were better and were prettier and were smarter. So the internalized racism is real, and we sometimes don't even recognize it, but we can see it in our children.
Right. It's a powerful thing. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome best-selling author Mary Frances Winters. She's the author of the new book that's already an Amazon.com bestseller called Black Fatigue, How Racism Erodes the Mind, Body, and Spirit. We're going to remind you all how you can stay connected with Mary Frances. So I want to talk about going back to the timeline, because you would not have known that this book was not planned for 2020, because, of course, you begin it talking about, you know, some of the things that are right on the hearts and minds of individuals, the George Floyd, death. You know, what we're dealing with COVID-19, with the pandemic and the response and the impact. So I want to talk about then, what it was like for you to be a part of the story, Mary Frances, because as I mentioned, you begin the book by sharing your own experiences with Black Fatigue. What was that like for you to reflect on those experiences and then to share them with all of us?
Well, I wasn't even going to include that chapter. And the editor of my book said, you've got to talk about yourself. And I tend not to do that. But as I looked at my life and I looked at, from the time I was 5 years old when I was in kindergarten, and it's been a long time since I've been in kindergarten. I've always said I'm a baby boomer. And this little white boy called me the N-word. My parents didn't use that language. I didn't know what it meant, but he was mean about it. And so from that day on, I changed, because think about a five-year-old trying to process. Somebody might not like me because I have brown skin. I'm only 5 years old. I'm trying to understand that.
Right.
I hadn't taken any psychology courses or sociology courses. Of course, I'm only five. But it made me be very cautious. So somebody might not like me because of the color of my skin. So I went from this carefree little kid, world was my oyster, to somebody who, would step back and would be cautious. And so it really was very reflective for me to think about all of the experiences, in my own life. When I got accepted to the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York, my guidance counselor said, I don't think you should go there. Well, I'm already accepted. She said, that's kind of a lofty goal for somebody like you. Once I got to the university,
wow.
I had big Angela Davis afro, and we, took over the administration building. And then in 1989, I became the first Black trustee, and I'm still a life trustee at that university. So when I think about my Black fatigue, and I didn't even really consider Black fatigue because that's just what we do. We're activists. But millennials actually were the ones who helped me to understand. I go into organizations and corporations and do diversity, equity, and inclusion work all the time. And I was hearing from millennials, we're tired. We're exhausted. We're exhausted about having to live while Black in these corporate spaces where we're not respected and valued, where we have to be on guard, where people are with Black women, people are asking, can I touch your hair? You're so articulate. And they say it in a way that I didn't really expect you to be. And I said to them, you're only 30 years old. How are you going to be tired already? And they give me the side eye like, hey, I know that I'm tired. And so I thought about it because I think that our generation, so I had through a colleague of mine, I was able to have her talk with Andrew Young, because Andrew Young is somebody close to her. And, Andrew Young was very close to Ambassador Andrew Young was very close to Dr. King. And so she asked him about Black fatigue. And he said, no, he said, we weren't fatigued back then. He said, we didn't even think about that. We didn't use that word. He said, I would have migraine headaches. And Dr. King would say, get on that plane. Once you get on the plane, that migraine headache is going to go away. And he said, we couldn't talk about being fatigued because we thought that we had to, be strong for the people. We had to really, represent and just keep on going. This breed of activists are saying rest is resistance, the nap therapy. And they're saying it's not our job to teach white people what it's like because it's not good for our health. It's not good for our well-being. And so I think that was very different for me in terms of my own reflection, because I've just been going through, doing this work for 36 years, and I've just been, pounding the pavement and working and not realizing the toll that the stress takes on me. Just today, we had a letter from an employee at one of our clients, and this letter was really very, very negative. You should cease and desist doing this work. That this is counter, and, it was just really a very harmful letter saying what the employees might do, the white employees might do if we continue with this work. Well, of course, we saw that Trump has banned anti-racism training in the government. This is not a government agency. This is a private corporation. However, that creates a lot of stress when you're thinking about, am I even safe, when I go to work?
Yeah. So I have to ask you this question, just based on your own experience, since you do share that in the book. Does it surprise you, you mentioned having those conversations with millennials, does it surprise you, Mary Frances, in 2020 that we are still having these conversations?
It does surprise me. Now, let me tell you what surprises me the most. What surprises me the most is that when the Black Lives Matter, these current protests started, that people were surprised that racism still existed. Breath shock. I can't believe I didn't know. I just had a meeting with a board, a not-for-profit board, primarily white people with a whole bunch of money who are on this board, whose mission it is, the organization's mission is to uplift disadvantaged and underprivileged groups. And they claim that they didn't know. And so much that they have to learn about racism, they didn't know the history. And I am like, I cannot believe, what have I been doing for 36 years in this work? What have I been saying? And others like me. I mean, I'm not the only person out here talking. So what really, really surprised me was that people are expressing shock. When people heard that the pandemic was killing Black people at 2 to 3 times the rate of white people, and people were shocked. Well, in 2003, a landmark study came out about the disparities in health, and healthcare organizations have been working on these disparities for years. So how can you not know that these inequities continue to exist? That's what was very surprising to me.
So what is your hope, since we are having these conversations, since people are definitely paying attention, Mary Frances, since people, I believe, I've seen it in ways that I have not seen it before, and I know we seem to always say that, when something happens, but the conversations I'm seeing people having, the people having the conversations, there is an awareness, it seems like, that things have to change. What is your hope that this book does and being a part of that change?
I hope that this book will educate white people on some of the history. I hope that it will inspire white people to begin to do their own work and to advocate for change and for systemic change and use their power. So everybody talks about allies today. That's a big thing, allyship. The concern that I have about allyship is that everybody who is an ally is not in a position to make change because they're not in power. So allyship can help at an interpersonal level, but it doesn't help at a systems level. And so what I would hope is that power brokers, and I define power brokers as those who are insiders and have influence. And we've seen what power brokers can do. When the protests started, those power brokers started to make some decisions to change things. And they made them really, really quickly. And so the power brokers know where the systems are broken, and the power brokers are the ones who can make those changes. And so that's what I would hope. I would also hope that this country would, for once and for all, would apologize for slavery. We've never done that. And people say, well, look, Mary Frances, that's been, 200 and some years ago. However, I think even though it is symbolic, look at South Africa, the truth and reconciliation. I think that apology is necessary, and I do believe that reparations are necessary. Reparations do not have to come in the form of cash necessarily, but I think some of it should be to descendants of slaves. But we're looking at what Princeton is doing and what Georgetown is doing in terms of offering scholarships to descendants of slaves. I think the acknowledgement takes the conversation in a whole different place, because right now we have a lot of white people who are embarrassed and ashamed. I think once you acknowledge you're wrong, you can get over the embarrassment and the shame. So I think that that is really necessary. And we've talked about reparations. As you well know, I am not the first person to talk about reparations, but we haven't done it. I think we have to stop using fragility and discomfort as an excuse and not allow people to use that as an excuse. I know the very popular book by Robin DiAngelo, White Fragility. I would say that white people use fragility as a power ploy. It's not being fragile, it's about being in power. So if I can deflect the conversation by saying, gee, I'm just really uncomfortable about it, that's using your power. That's really, and I think we have to call it, as such. I think in organizations, the financial services, the tobacco industry, railroad, all of those industries that have had a part in systemic racism need to acknowledge that and need to come forward with some type of reparations and some type of change and looking at systemic change. If we want to do something in the very near term, we just need to look at voter suppression. Voter suppression is very intentional. It's very systemic. And we need, if somebody wants to be an anti-racist right now in your local communities, look at where voter suppression is happening. Make sure that everybody who is eligible to vote votes. I think that is really important because there's a systemic, something of a systemic nature is going on relative to voter suppression. 15th Amendment guaranteed voting rights to black people, black men. But in 1965, we needed Voter Rights Act because it wasn't happening. In 2020, John Lewis was very instrumental in that, and we know he passed away recently. We needed another Voting Rights Act. And so we have not made that progress in guaranteeing the voting rights to people, to black people, because they are disproportionately impacted. And so there are things that we can do, you know, immediately. You know, declaring that Juneteenth is a holiday, I mean, okay, great. But that doesn't get at systemic racism.
Yeah. As you said, even allude to in the subtitle of the book, I mean, it really has to encompass the whole problem and the whole person. And I think in looking at that mind, body, spirit aspect is something for us to keep in mind. Again, everyone, Mary Frances Winters has been our guest. Great conversation with you, Mary Frances. Her new book is Black Fatigue, How Racism Erodes the Mind, Body, and Spirit. It is an Amazon.com bestseller. You guys can get it there today or get it from your favorite local bookstore. And Mary Frances, how can our audience stay connected with you?
Twitter at Mary F. Winters, Instagram at Mary Frances Winters, and LinkedIn, Mary F. Winters.
Okay. So make sure you guys are definitely staying connected. Mary Frances, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime. Looking forward to our next chat together.
I hope you invite me back. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. Let's make today amazing. Take care.